Okay. Hi.
Hello.
Welcome back to our podcast, The Ugly Truth About the Girl Next Door. I'm Kate.
And I'm Lori.
And today we're doing something really different. We are both podcasting and also live on social media. We wanted to do this old school today with our one...
the way we used to.
One microphone propped on a pillow.
For real, this is where we started.
This is where we started.
This is what it looked like.
Yeah. So embarrassing. But we are actually coming to you today from Boston, Massachusetts, where we have spent the last, we've been here since Sunday, doing a lot of really cool things. And I know we've talked a lot about Boston and about just the, how far ahead they are. They're the leader in the country in the anti-trafficking world and in a lot of their policies and procedures and things that they do at their state level of the Department of Child and Family Services. So, first off, huge shout out to Massachusetts. Like, we have just been so humbled and so grateful to be in a space where, I wish I had better words. We literally have, it has taken us so long to even get to doing this podcast episode this week because, we feel speechless, which is how we felt the last time we left here too. Just the reality of having people in high places, people who have the ability to make a change, people who are making policies and procedures, wanting to learn, wanting to know more. So we're humbled. We're really humbled to be here.
What we keep saying is we were screaming into the wind for so long, and to be in a place where we're actually talking to people who are prepared and wanting to hear what we have to say is just amazing.
Yeah. So I guess let's first talk quickly about what it is that we're even doing here, right? Because we're not just like, what's wrong?
I don't think this is recording over here, but that's okay. You keep talking.
Okay. It looks like it is.
Usually there's a thing down here.
Huh. Okay. We're so good at podcasting.
We are.
Okay, so high level of what we've been doing here in Boston, we were hired by the state of Massachusetts to come and do some trainings for them this week. Crazy like kismet story. A very important person at the Department of Child and Family Services. Back in February, her husband was like scrolling social media and said to her, "Hey, babe, you might want to take a look at this. It's a podcast about a girl that was trafficked by her family. And since you work in the anti-trafficking part of DCF."
So her job, one of her many roles that she plays at DCF is she is responsible for the state's anti-trafficking response in child protective services.
Yeah.
So it was right up her alley, he thought.
Yeah. So she listened to the podcast, and a few episodes in, she was like, "Oh my gosh, this is amazing." Really opens a new door, a new light, sheds new light on the work that we're already doing. In February, when we had our anniversary episode, I made a joke like, "Hey, if you want us to come speak, let us know," like half joking. And she immediately that night got on the computer and sent us a quick email and said, "Hey, would you come and speak?" So this
February.
So this trip has been months in the making of collaborating with them and talking with them and working out what it is that her DCF workers need to hear and how much do they need to hear and how do we implement it and all of the things. So Tuesday, we started with a training for 150 social workers in DCF. So on boots on the ground, ongoing social workers, MDT managers. So that's they're multidisciplinary teams who work together and in getting prosecution and in also helping kids get safe.
So they are the people that come together to interview children. So they only have to be interviewed once. That's the idea of the MDT and
yeah.
the CAC.
Yeah.
So there's a thing that says are requesting to be in your live video. What does that mean?
It means that we can do that.
That's fine. I don't know what that means.
View request. Okay. Accept. Okay. Dope. Okay. So Tuesday we stood in front of 150 people. We gave a 6-hour training on family controlled trafficking, on organized sexual abuse. And, we are very much like, we're just two fools doing a podcast. So like, hopefully our listeners know, like, we're not here to like toot our own horn, but This was the high. So this was a voluntary sign up. This was not a mandated training for these DCF workers. And 150 people voluntarily signed up for the training, which
for is... For full day training, which what we're hearing is that certainly since COVID, their numbers of their caseloads are up, the seriousness of the cases they're facing are up. And so these are people who are already very overwhelmed trying to help keep children safe. And they took an entire day out of an already very busy week to come and hear two fools who do a podcast talk about something because it's important and because there's some awareness that they need to know what we have to say.
Yeah. Truly, Tuesday, the training was unbelievable. You could hear a pin drop in the room. It was the feedback that we got from it was, oh my goodness, I'm reflecting, I'm ruminating, I'm thinking about all of the cases I've had in the past. I'm trying to process like where I may have missed something. I'm trying to process just what I can do better, what I can do different. We need more information. We need more education. We need more training around this, which was really wild for us to, again, hear that feedback from people who do this every day. So keep in mind, these are the people who deal with trafficking and with sexual abuse and child abuse on the regular. It's literally their job to deal with it. And they are saying to us, but we've missed this and we need more. So that was Tuesday. Wednesday, we had an opportunity to speak to the statewide managers. So what we kept saying was, we've trained all of these on-the-ground social workers, but now they have the information. They may have a case that they feel, oh my gosh, we need to do more because it could be this. But they're going to end up doing this.
Hitting the ceiling of the policies and procedures that they're required to follow.
Right.
So we need to talk to the people who are making those decisions too.
Right. So Tuesday morning, we had an opportunity to talk to about 100 Massachusetts statewide managers and present to them as well and give them, you know, the information and tell my experience and tell our experience trying to get help and all the things. And then Wednesday afternoon, we were invited to sit in a round table conversation with people who actually can make change. So policy, a person from policy was there, an attorney for DCF.
Supervisors, area managers, yes, people are in charge of certain programs that specifically touch adjacent things.
Yes. And again, every single one of them was going, okay, we have a lot of work to do. What are we going to do here? Could this be true? But I know this is true. It hangs together. It makes sense. I've seen this before, and we have a lot of work ahead of us to make sure that we're not letting these kids slip through the cracks.
What we repeatedly heard, too, was some of what we said was, wow, we've never heard that before. But some of what we said was like, we've heard that, but we never put it together in quite that way. And now all the pieces are clicking into place, and now we're galvanized to do something to take that information and go make a difference in how we're functioning, yeah. Which was very huge. But I think we were also very aware that these are already people who are doing very hard things. And so we also tried hard to make sure that they were hearing the gravity of what we were sharing, but also a message of hope,
yeah,
that it makes a difference how you show up. Even if you can't magically make it all better, showing up for a child makes a huge difference.
Yeah, for sure.
Glad for that too.
We're just really thankful to have a seat at the table at this point. So that's kind of where we want to move next is that, you know, we've said 1,000 times, we started the podcast as an act of desperation. We started the podcast because these people could not leave me alone. Terrible, terrible things were still happening even when we started the podcast, when we got to the point of, okay, we have to start a podcast. It was because terrible things were happening. And I'm still safety planning every single day. I am infinitely safer than I was before we started the podcast. And so that is amazing and wonderful. And we're so grateful for that. And we're grateful for the support that we have received both in our community and across, honestly, the globe.
Mm-hmm. But also, again, to say every day is still a safety plan.
Every day,
you don't go places alone. You don't stay home alone. You don't all the things.
Exactly. And we are still fighting. Why are you turning it towards me? You look great.
No, you were like out of the frame.
Oh.
So awkward.
So weird.
I know. She gave me a mug that says awkward is my specialty.
It is, though. It is.
I know.
But yeah, every day is a safety plan. We are still fighting uphill battles in Western New York, unfortunately. I just saw today someone sent us a message that said that in a Grand Ideas for Grand Islanders group, a new family moved to the island and had asked, where should I send my kids to daycare / religious affiliation type of places? And their suggestion was Cornerstone Church on Grand Island and or Bible Presbyterian Church on Grand Island. Like, how many different ways do we have to say, guys, there's named offenders actually sitting in those pews, in those buildings, having access to children? But that is the screaming into the wind feeling of how many times. I mean, we'll keep saying it. Don't get me wrong. We will keep saying it. But that is the screaming into the wind. But
this feeling of what is happening here, we keep saying it makes all of that feel so not unimportant, because obviously we care deeply about whether or not those children are safe, but that feeling of we have other ways that we can inform the world, inform the public, other than trying to bash our head against this wall with people who don't frankly really want to hear what we have to say. Nobody in Western New York is reaching out to us.
I'm thinking about Christiana and I actually did a live at one point where we said, you know, this was probably almost a year ago at this point. Like, we have done everything we can possibly do to keep the kids in these specific places safe. Mm-hmm. We have given the names to the churches. We have given the names to the authorities. We have done everything. We've named them publicly, most of them. We have done everything that we can do. But now what we are doing is creating a safer world for them to come forward if and when, God forbid, they have to come forward with this information. Because we cannot change that the offenders are still sitting in the pews at Cornerstone. We cannot change that Bible Presbyterian is still being led by a sex offender. There is nothing I can do about that other than what we have done, are doing, and continue to do. What we can do at this point, though, is educate teachers, DCF workers, the people who are going to be there when these children now say, this was wrong, I don't want to live in this abuse anymore, and now I need help. We are educating the helpers of the world to be there for when that happens, because that is the next thing to do. There is no, like, that is the next thing to do. So we are also incredibly, incredibly humbled and grateful to have a seat at this table. We did not start out, we actually started out both of our presentations this week saying, we did not set out to be the experts in the room. We really didn't. We are here talking. We
never expected to be the experts in the room. No. We actively looked to find the experts so that we could get in their room. We needed to be in their room. We needed to know what they knew that could help us to do this in a way that made Kate and others safer.
Yeah.
But we couldn't find those
people. And so here we are, the experts in the room, and we're grateful to be here, and we are watching how it's unfolding, and we are excited about the ways that we're moving forward. We're excited about our nonprofit and about the work that we're doing there. We're excited both about the direct support services to victims, but also about this idea of, okay, how are we going to create a safety net for the kids that are coming after us? Because we know there are kids coming after us. 58, we quoted statistics in our presentations this week. You got to pull it up because my brain is like melting out of my eyes.
You can tell that about.
Yeah. No makeup. We're like, just here. We are here. Today is a day that's just like a, oh my goodness day. But 58% from an international study that was done on adult survivors, they talked about their abuse in their childhood, and it said 58% of them reported having had more than one person abusing them. So that's a multiple perpetrator, multiple offender scenario, that organized sexual abuse that we're talking about. And 82% reported that parents or family members or extended family members were the primary offender when it was a multiple offender scenario. 82%. Guys, statistics do not lie to us. That is an international study. And when you read the international study, the people who did the study were actually surprised at the findings themselves. The journal article that we found this in, they were like, we had no idea until we did this survey. It's also saying that 56% reported that the abuse started before the age of four. Before the age of four. Okay, so kids who do not have words to describe what is going on to them, who is hurting them, and how they're being hurt, are being hurt 56% before the age of four.
And 53% of those kids whose abuse started before the age of four said that their abuse continued into their adulthood.
Yep.
Until their adult, yep. Into their adulthood.
Yep. So the podcast started as an act of desperation. It started because I wasn't safe and there was no one to help. It is still that, but we are now moving forward. It is not just desperation for me. It is still, we will be as loud as we can for as long as we can, because the minute we stop, I don't know. But it is also now desperation for the kids that are coming after us, for the women and the men and the adult survivors who have no idea where to start their healing journey because they've never had a name for what it is that happened to them. We are desperately trying to make a difference. We've been given a seat at the table. So here we are showing up, and we're going to take the seat and make a difference.
I was just thinking, we're constantly shocked that we have a seat at the table. And, you know, people have said to us, like, we're like ridiculously like unaware of the impact that we have. But the truth of the matter is, we truly, microphone propped on a pillow, we are literally just two fools doing a podcast who had no idea that we were going to have the opportunity to make a ripple. Yeah. And now we are. And there's also this, I think, responsibility that we feel of, we didn't see this coming, but now it's happened, mm-hmm. and we have to do something meaningful with it.
We also feel this, and this is like maybe more for the podcast, less for the live, although who knows if we're recording.
I think so.
We've realized, and in the person who gave our introductions at these trainings kind of did this whole thing of the thread that brought us together and the thread of each of our adult lives and how we got to this point. So yes, we're two fools doing a podcast, but Lori has also been working in the trauma arena for a very long time. So my bringing my trauma to her was not such a far leap that it could be for a lot of people who work with victims. She's done trainings, she's done presentations, she's done, TBRI. I'm trying to like remember your resume and like, don't know.
I've done things. Honestly, more than anything, I think it's much of my life has been spent in domains that are road less traveled, right?
Yes.
When I started doing adoption attachment work, it wasn't something that was well understood. It was kind of pioneering.
Right.
It's where I live.
And coupled with that, I mean, my own work experience and history, I've also done presentations and things like that. I'm able to present to a room of 150 people. But there is an element of bringing the lived experience mm-hmm. that you cannot bring unless you have experienced it. And I don't say that, like, I just talked to my husband last night and I was saying, I would change that in a heartbeat. I would trade all of this to have not had to do that. I would rather be working any other job, doing any other thing in my life than this. But because I have all of this lived experience, because I actually went through these horrible, heinous things, I am the only one, survivors are the only ones who can talk about it, who can say, hang on a second, you're not thinking about this, because we're the only ones that can think like a survivor.
We had that experience so many times in the conversations with DCF staff. Again, because they're respectfully holding space to hear Kate's viewpoint, mm-hmm. for Kate to say, well, yeah, I understand that maybe that's how that would be best done with a different child, but let me tell you how that is experienced by somebody who's survived what I've survived. Mm-hmm. Huge. It's huge.
Yeah. Again, the people in the room wanted to hear that. They were mm-hmm. listening. They were holding space for, that makes a lot of sense. And how can we change our policies? How can we change what we do to reflect that and help those kids better? So just an absolutely wild experience.
There have been times where we really felt like we were kind of just sitting in silence, which when we think about doing this, we were like, I don't know, we kind of can't just sit in silence and do a live. We kind of have to find words to describe. Yeah. But we've spent a lot of time sitting in silence just kind of trying to figure out how to make sense of how this all feels, because it's kind of mind-blowing.
Yeah. What we also know is that this is the first of many. We feel very much like we are now hitting the ground running. which is both exciting and exhilarating. And okay, here we go.
Buckle up.
Buckle up. But what we keep in the forefront of our minds is that we are doing this so that kids 10 years, 15 years from now do not have to start a podcast to get help. They do not have to go to the general public to get help. They do not have to put every detail of their story and feel exploited. And not that I feel exploited by the podcast, but by Grace, by other things. They do not have to tell every salacious detail of their story to anybody who will listen just to get help. So that is the goal, is that we can do better for the kids that are coming after us, because we know that they will be coming.
We are so grateful to all of the people who have listened, who have shared the podcast, who have told other people about it. Without you, we never would have gotten to this point. Again, it has been this groundswell of just people, regular people who are like, wait, what? And want to listen and want to share. And we just...
But I think that's kind of the point of this episode / live, is... That happened, and the groundswell and the support of the people is what has put us in these rooms, right? Mm-hmm. The woman who reached out to us from Boston, her husband scrolled past it on Facebook, which, right? Like, mind blowing.
It also shouldn't be left to chance. What if he hadn't scrolled past it? What if it hadn't landed on him? What if? It should not be, oh, gee, isn't it great that it just happened that way?
Yeah. But I'm just saying, like, it took all of the supporters, it took all of the people listening, it took it becoming something for, and we wouldn't have had any of that. We had no control over that. That it just happened, you know? So thank you for that. Thank you for allowing us to be in a space and in a position to now make a difference.
And for all of you being willing to know such hard things to know. You know, we understand people who have trauma. This can be way too hard to listen to, but there are also a lot of regular people who don't have trauma who frankly just prefer not to know. Like they'll watch CSI and like NCIS and whatever they watch, but to know a real
NCIS?
Thing, I don't know.
Is that still on?
What's the other one? The SVU. Yeah. What's the first part of that? Something, something SVU.
Law and Order.
Oh yeah, there it is. Right. So that.
I don't think people watch NCIS, but tell me if I'm wrong. I would love to hear. I would love to hear from you.
Anyway, so people are willing to watch the things, but that doesn't mean that they are willing to kind of know the truths. Like, it's one thing if it's over there, it's like an imagination thing. So we're really grateful to the people who have been willing to sit in this really hard truth and not run away and hide from it. There was actually a slide in our presentation that was a slide of a man with his head stuck in the ground, because there are a lot of people, too many. And we're just grateful that you're not that.
We're also grateful for people who said the hard yes, for people who said, it's very uncomfortable for me to leave Cornerstone Church, to leave my church, to cut off relationships or to distance relationships. Mm-hmm. But I believe this, and I know that it's true, and here's all the reasons. And I'm going to say the hard yes. That's not easy, and nobody is saying that it is. I've never, ever said that that's easy. But we are beyond grateful for the people who said the hard yes, because truthfully, the people who didn't, who had an opportunity to make a difference and chose not to out of, we're live, so we cannot cut.
Out of an excess of discomfort or?
Out of an excess of self-centeredness.
There we go. We'll go with that.
Those people frustrate me quite a bit.
Okay, but you've said that to me several times, that the resentment that you have toward offenders is one kind of resentment. The resentment that you feel toward people who could and don't is different.
Yeah, at least offenders, you know they're evil, right? We all know that they're evil people. They are sick, twisted, sociopathic, psychopathic, sexual predators. You know who that, you see it, you know it. I know that, right? People who are neutral, who are touting this, I mean, I'm thinking about John Camardo at the chapel, right? He is the executive director of the chapel, and he is the executive pastor, sorry. And he is, you know, Mr. Good Guy, and he's whatever. And yet he could not do the hard thing. He couldn't say the hard yes. He chickened out. He had no spine. I'm thinking of John Sherholtz at Cornerstone Church on Grand Island, right? He is not an offender himself that I'm aware of, but he has no spine. And so therefore children potentially will be hurt on his watch because he is unable to say the hard yes. So that frustrates me more. I mean, obviously the offenders make me sick. But there is a level of frustration with those people who cannot just say the hard yes and believe survivors. Because what we know is that 92 to 98% of survivors' allegations are actually, in fact, true. And that very few people who are accused are actually innocent. So that's my soapbox for today, I guess.
Neutral is not an option.
Neutral is not an option.
And there are, we both have people in our immediate world who choose neutrality, who think that's really an option, and it's just not.
Yeah, yeah. So I feel like, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just, honestly, I think we want to end on just the positive note of we are encouraged and hopeful for the first time, frankly, in a long time. You know, we've been going, screaming into the wind because what choice was there if not us, then who?
At all the policy level and at the helper level.
Yeah, not the general public.
Support level.
Right. No, but in terms of creating a ripple that changes things so that the next kids, the next people don't have to do a podcast to get help. It's been frustrating, but we feel encouraged and hopeful, and we know there are people who are watching this or listening to the podcast who are across the country, across the world. Hey, this started in Massachusetts with one email, and we are eager to bring more organizations along with us so that this can change for the kids who are stuck.
Yep.
Those statistics do not lie. So you can think what you think about Kate or Kate's story or the others we've mentioned, but statistics do not lie. There are too many kids out there who need a change, and we're here to help make that happen.
Yeah, we're here to start the wave. All right, as always, thank you so much. We are going to now go rest our brains because we are quite tired.
A little bit.
Very, very high and encouraged, but very tired. So we are grateful for you all. And as always, thank you. So I have to figure out how to end this.
Yeah, you can do it.
I have no idea. X. Uh-huh. Yep, that seems right.
There we go.
There we go.
Okay.
Dope. I feel like that was good.